Welcome to Radio Shalom. I'm Deb Levy, and today we're looking at increasing our spirituality. Thanks to our listeners from last week, we were exploring the relationship between body and soul and how we can love our bodies a little bit more. And today we're stepping away from the bodies and moving more towards the soul, thinking about different ways in which we can increase our spirituality. So for today's broadcast, we're going to be looking at some different Jewish ideas. You'll probably notice overlaps between the Jewish ideas and ways of thinking about spirituality and the type of spirituality that we see outside of the Jewish tradition. And I would invite anyone who's listening to treat today like a smorgasbord. What do I mean like a smorgasbord? Like a buffet? Have a look at all of the different things on offer. Choose the things you like and that taste good to you, and try not to spit on the rest in case someone else wants to eat it. So that's how we're going to treat today, a smorgasbord of spirituality. And to start off with, the first technique I want to introduce is the idea of purposeful action, of bringing more intention to what we do. And by example, each of us today can think about who our learning is for. In the Jewish tradition, every act of learning Torah, of learning something about Judaism, Torah, Hashem, God, any act of that is not just an act that is intellectual. It's also an act that is spiritual, and it has spiritual merit. And we can take that merit for ourselves. We can also bestow that merit onto other people. So for all of us today to take a moment and think about somebody who we would like this broadcast and our learning today from this broadcast to elevate a little bit. It could be somebody who's with us in this world. It could be somebody who's no longer with us in this world and we want to elevate their souls. A beautiful idea in the Jewish tradition is that just because someone is no longer with us doesn't mean we don't have the opportunity to still give to them. And actually, the giving that we do is much more selfless because they can't return the favors in the same way that the living can. So take a moment and think of somebody who needs a little bit of extra strength, a little bit of extra merit, and just dedicate the learning that you're doing today to that person. For me today, I'm remembering my grandparents, and so I hope that the learning that we're doing today can help to elevate their souls. Now, interestingly, to reflect on and to notice whether that has an impact on your spirituality will help you decide whether this is something from the buffet that you wish to take or not. Yeah? And if it is, it's something that you can use in many different areas of your life, which is to look at a task and think, is there any additional intention, any additional purpose that I can add into this task? I really noticed the difference as we celebrated Passover last month, Pesach. And one of the things that happens with the festival of Passover, we're commemorating the Exodus from Egypt. And as many know, one of the things that happened is that in the haste in which the Jewish people left the land of Egypt and left slavery to head into the desert and ultimately to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, the Bible, the haste in which they left meant that the bread did not have a chance to rise. And that's why we see in the Jewish tradition for Passover, we get rid of all forms of chametz, of things that have risen or been fermented or in some way become puffed up. And because of that, yeah, one of the things that we do is we change over our dishes to make sure that all the dishes that have been contaminated, as it were, by bread and other puffed up products, that those are removed and that we bring in dishes that are touched only by the matzah, the unleavened bread, that is part of the good deed, the mitzvot that we have for Passover, for Pesach. And I noticed how much this technique of intention impacted on the spirituality of taking out the dishes and putting them away. When I was taking out the dishes and putting away all the old dishes at the beginning of Passover, before the festival even started, it was laborious work. It wasn't particularly stimulating work. But for me, knowing in my head that I was part of thousands of years of tradition and that this was something that had been done across time and space, across generations. It was something that my great-great-grandparents had done, perhaps with different materials even, that for me I was doing it now with modern-day plastics and glass and Corningware, but that historically this might have been done with wooden bowls or with pottery or with other materials, and that maybe one day in the future that my descendants would be doing it with materials that perhaps haven't even been invented yet. For me, adding in that intention, that purpose to what I was doing, made the task not just manageable, but in some ways actually pleasurable and a positive experience. And I have to say, I contrast that with putting them all away and trying to get the house back into order. And I didn't have that sense of purpose and intention. And it was just a horrible task. And I didn't enjoy it. And I felt grumpy. And it didn't have a particularly good effect on my spirituality. So that technique, number one, can really increase our spirituality. And I guess we have to be aware that when we don't do our actions with purpose and intention, the result can be potentially a decrease in spirituality as well. So that's technique number one. Technique number two, I love this one, is taking inspiration from others. The truth is that as much as we may want to be spiritual beings and to feel a sense of spirituality, particularly with the busyness of everyday life, it can be really challenging to channel that. And so if we're finding it tough, why not borrow from the inspiration of others? In the Jewish tradition, we often do this through storytelling. And I love hearing the stories from the different Hasidic masters, because with Hasidic Judaism, there's a focus on drawing as much spirituality as possible into everything and to serve Hashem, to serve God with joy. Yeah, as we say in the Psalms, Ev duet Hashem besimcha. Yeah, serve Hashem with gladness. And so we can draw inspiration from stories of others who have been able to do that in troubling times. And then when we compare our own situations and realize perhaps our times aren't as troubling or our situation isn't as difficult, and if they could draw spirituality into their situation, then definitely we can draw spirituality into ours. One of the examples I want to share with you is from Rabbi Elimelech. And him and his brother were traveling in Eastern Europe over 100 years ago, actually closer to 200 years ago. And at the time, they were traveling in an area where practicing and preaching and sharing the Jewish religion was illegal, was against the law. And ultimately, Rabbi Elimelech and his brother were caught and they were thrown into prison. Now, prison back then wasn't what prison is today, and I'm not trying to minimize the experience of those who are in prison in places like New Zealand today. It's not that it is an easy situation, but there were slightly, worse conditions, not slightly, there were significantly worse conditions in this time. And so being thrown into jail meant being thrown into a small room in which all those who'd broken laws were thrown in together, and there were no facilities. So people were sleeping on the ground, and in the middle of the room, the closest they had to bathroom facilities was a bucket. So Rabbi Elimelech and his brother are sitting in a room with people who are there because they've committed crimes that are violent, crimes that are unethical, and they have committed the crime of practicing their religion and sharing it with other people. And they're all thrown in the same cell together. And the brothers are feeling a bit despondent because not only are they in this difficult situation, but Jewish law says that it's not appropriate for a person to pray, to daven, or for a person to study Torah, to study Jewish learning and the Bible, in a place where there's the presence of feces. And so because there's a bucket in the middle of the room and that bucket contains human waste, the brothers are not able to study. And this greatly distresses them. Until Rabbi Elimelech says, you know what? Actually, when you think about it, all we want to do is Hashem's will, the will of God. And actually, Hashem could have put us in any situation. God could have chosen for us to be in a synagogue right now, or out in a field, or in our own homes. But instead, the specific situation that has been chosen for us is to be in this prison cell. And so, don't feel sad, brother. Realize that just by being here right now and not praying and not studying, you're actually fulfilling the will of Hashem. You're fulfilling God's will, and so it's still a mitzvah, it's still a good deed. Wow. At this news, the brothers' moods both lighten and they start singing a nigun. Nigun is a tune without words that enhances one's feelings of spirituality and happiness and well-being. So that they can do even though the bucket is present. So they start singing this tune. And then what happens next is amazing. They're filled with so much joy and so much energy, they actually start dancing around the bucket. Now, for those who are in suspense listening at home, how are the other prisoners going to respond to two rabbis dancing around a bucket of filth in joy and with laughter? Okay, so there may be different things that we expect could happen, but what actually happens is unbelievable. The prisoners find the joy contagious and hilarious, and they start joining in with the tune and dancing around in the cell around the bucket as well. Unfortunately, this attracts the attention of the guard. The guard comes in and demands to know what's going on. He picks up the prisoner closest to him by the lapels, grabs him close to his face and says to him, "What are you doing?" And the prisoner says, "Honestly, I don't know." And he said, "Well, how did this start?" And he said, "Look, those two started it," points at the rabbis. And he said, "Well, why are they so happy? Why are they singing and dancing?" And the guy says, "Look, they were speaking a different language. I don't know why they're so happy and why they're singing or dancing, but they were pointing at the bucket and they're dancing around the bucket." The guard says, "Okay, well, if the bucket's making them that happy, we're going to remove the bucket," and takes the bucket out of the cell. The brothers are then in a position, having had the human waste removed from the cell, that they are permitted to daven, to pray to Hashem, and to study Torah together. And in that way, they merited having their joy increased by being able to do even more of what they wanted in terms of Hashem's will, serving Hashem with gladness. It's a hilarious and charming story. I love it. It's one of my favorite Hasidic stories. And it also has a really powerful message for us as well, which is that so much of our frustration, our upset, our unhappiness, things which really contribute to a decrease in spirituality, not an increase in spirituality, have to do with our perspective. When the bucket in the middle of the room symbolized the fact that they couldn't do the things that they wanted to do to honor Hashem, it was a source of distress and upset. And yet, when their attitude changed and they saw it as an opportunity to do exactly what was required of them in that moment, because otherwise they wouldn't have been in that situation, they were filled with joy. For all of us, we have a choice of attitude. I'm not saying it's always easy. I know for me personally, the energy it takes to change one's attitude when you're feeling a lack of spirituality is really, really challenging. But we can use technique number two, which is taking inspiration from others. Technique number three is gratitude. A part of my role in the Jewish community is that I run different educational classes for different age groups. And each week I run a Jewish women's learning class. And we were discussing gratitude and learning about gratitude together. And I had this idea in my head that one of the ways we could engender gratitude was a fast-paced exercise where each person got a pen and a piece of paper and wrote down as many things that they were grateful for at once, and that would make us all feel grateful afterwards. I don't know what I was thinking, because the result was each of us got this crazy kick of adrenaline, and because I'd made it time limited as well, we were all more in kind of game mode of like a panic, of like a trivia game where you have to get as much information in as possible, or the kind of feeling you get in an exam when the time's running out and you're stressed and trying to write as much as you can. And so rather than engendering spirituality, it kind of resulted in all of us being quite flustered. And afterwards, when we stopped and took a breath, and also I had a giggle at the fact that my idea had failed so colossally, at that moment I then said, okay, let's try something different. let's just choose one thing on the list that we're grateful for. It could be a person you're grateful for, a place, an ability, an experience, anything. Choose one of them and just breathe, take a moment, reflect on how much you appreciate having that in your life, whatever it is. And that resulted in an increase of our individual and collective spirituality in the room that night. That was something that actually enabled us to focus in on gratitude. And I find this is particularly relevant when we feel gratitude for a person in our life with whom we have an uncomplicated relationship with. Often those are the people in our life that are kind of 5 years and under. And we just, when we picture their faces, when we think about how blessed we are to have them in our lives, it physically manifests in feeling a warm sense of gratitude, not just in your heart and your soul, but actually in your body as well. And the research shows us in terms of neuroscience that the parts of our brain which light up, for want of a better word, in terms of the ways in which our neurons move and respond. So the parts of our brains that light up when we're imagining something are the same parts of our brain that light up when we're experiencing something. So even if we can't always be with the people who engender gratitude in us and who help boost our spirituality, just by taking a moment to close our eyes, to picture their faces, to enjoy the fact that we have them in our lives or had them in our lives for a time, will, from a neurological point of view, have a beneficial impact on our bodies, and spiritually will have a beneficial impact on our souls. So that's technique number three. Technique number four. This one ties in a little bit with the gratitude and focusing on a person, but actually this one takes us back to nature. And again, it's not going to work for everybody. We're going to treat it as a smorgasbord. I remember talking to my niece and nephew about going away on youth group camp where they live under canvas and bathe each day in the river and have an amazing time kind of connecting with nature and having a very physical and outdoors experience. And my nephew loves it. Couldn't wait to go on camp. He was so excited. And I asked my niece, why aren't you going on the camp? And she said to me with absolute deadpan face, I hate nature. And I asked her, what do you mean? And she explained that by the time she's cold and uncomfortable and wet and there are insects biting her, there are smells she doesn't like, there are sounds that disconcert her, for her, nature does not increase her spirituality. It doesn't even increase her happiness. It just comes out as a source of stress. So for some people, meditation on nature and experiencing nature is not a technique that is going to increase our spirituality. But for others, reflecting on our natural world, being in and experiencing our natural world, has a huge impact. And again, with what I said about the way that our brains respond to the situations we imagine, not just the situations we're in, we can be sitting at our desk at our computer in the office and still be able to transport ourselves to places in the natural world that have had a benefit for our spirituality. And one really, really simple thing that you can do right now is just to look at the screensavers on your phone. And could you change the picture to something that increases your spirituality? Either something that you're grateful for or something in the natural world that you connect to. And next week, we're going to have the lovely Joan Lardner on the program again, please God. And one of the things she always talks about is her drive on the way into the studio. One of the things that really increases her feelings of well-being and spirituality, witnessing the trees, the beautiful trees, and particularly as they change with the seasons like they are now. We're surrounded by these colors of gold, orange, yellow, red. And by focusing on those, again, it's a choice of attitude. She could focus on Auckland traffic, but she chooses to focus on those beautiful trees. So that's technique number four. Technique number five is using religious practice as a pathway to mindfulness. Let me explain. There are many different things in the Jewish tradition that we do, sometimes almost by rote, because they're part of religious practice. For example, the blessings that we make over different things that we do during the day. So last week we spoke about there's even a blessing for after you've gone to the bathroom. This week I want to talk about the blessings that we make over food. There's effectively a please and thank you relationship that we have with God when it comes to food. We say a blessing before we eat as an expression of gratitude, and we say a blessing after we eat again as a thank you. And just like we teach our children that when they want something they need to say please, and once they've received it they need to say thank you, so too for us, we do it as well. And when you think about it, with a little child, when you teach them to say please and thank you, you don't really expect them to have genuine gratitude in that moment. You know, and you can often hear it in the voice. Don't forget to say please to Auntie Doris. Please, don't forget to say thank you, thank you, Auntie Doris. We know that it might not be coming from a genuine place. But there's also a relationship between the way we act, the way we feel, and ultimately the way we are. So if we go with a practice, a behavior, it will start to influence our spirituality as well. And so even though it might feel a little bit contrived or less than genuine when we make a blessing over food, particularly if it's not a food we feel like or like, actually, by practicing it, ultimately, we can transform that into emotion and ultimately into spirituality. So for those who are listening at home, if you have something around you that you can eat or drink, let's go even with a simple cup of water. I encourage you, go to the tap, fill up your glass or pick up your drink bottle, and we're going to try out this technique together, this idea of religious practice as a pathway to mindfulness, and by doing that, increasing our spirituality. So think about the last time you had a drink of water, for example, and it might even be hard to remember because we do it often without mindfulness and without thinking. And this time, I want you to hold the glass in front of you, the drink that you have, contemplate it, and I'll share with you the blessing that we make over water. So anytime somebody takes a drink, even if it is water, yeah, also if it's something more exciting, whiskey, there's a blessing that we always make over a beverage. And it's interesting to point out the only exception is if that beverage is wine or grape juice, then there's an element of spirituality involved in wine and grape juice that means we have a different blessing. But if it is the blessing for any other beverage, we say it no matter whether it's something that we see as incredibly valuable. I use the example of whiskey because that's what I enjoy. Or whether we see it as something that's very much an everyday food or drink like water or a cup of tea. And so the blessing that we make, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nihyeh bidvaro. Right? Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe. And the last bit, the unique translation for the blessing of a drink is, through whose word everything came to be. Now, by saying that blessing, there are different aspects that connect us back to source. Baruch, blessed. Ata, are you, and then to use Hashem's holy name. These remind us, Baruch, blessings, how blessed we are. Ata, that we have a direct relationship with Creator. A fundamental part of Judaism is that you don't need to access through any intermediary. You already have a direct connection with your Creator, and that is something that you can access at any time, anywhere, without any prerequisite conditions. And then to recognize and think about where this water came from, how fortunate we are to live in a place where we have access to it, how wonderful it is that if we have a physical need in terms of thirst or hunger, that we can meet it. And then to drink the water after that. In this way, we're using an everyday religious practice as a way to connect mindfully to what we're doing. And this can also increase our spirituality. The next technique I want to offer us from the smorgasbord is the idea of radical acceptance. Yeah, this is what we call it in psychology, radical acceptance, that you absolutely go, you know what, this is the situation I'm in, I might not like it, but I just have to accept it because that's my reality, and in this case, there's nothing I can do about it. In Jewish thought, a much more long-standing term that we have instead of radical acceptance is an understanding of hashgacha pratit, which kind of translates to divine providence, the idea that there's a bigger plan, a bigger picture, and we might not understand it, but we know that it comes from a loving place from our Creator, and so we accept it and try and move forward with love. There's a really cool analogy that Rabbi David Asher brings when it comes to this technique, which can really help us not just in increasing our spirituality, but in decreasing the amount of stress and anxiety that we experience in everyday life around all the things that we cannot control. And the analogy he uses is that there are two people who are going on a bus to an important business meeting. The first man who's on the bus spends the whole time watching the driver, worrying about which turn he's taking, complaining in his own head about why he didn't push through that orange light and waited for the red, thinking about how he's wasting too much time waiting for the next person to get on the bus, and concerned about which twists and turns the driver is taking. And half an hour later, he gets to his very important meeting. He's pretty stressed. He's pretty worked up. And he's had a really rough time on the journey on the bus. Man number two sitting on the bus, he gets on the bus and he greets the bus driver. He's taking the bus because he knows he sits back and he doesn't make any decisions. If he was driving, he'd have to choose which way to go, which lights he wanted to push through, which ones he wanted to wait for. But actually, he's on the bus and he trusts the driver. He sits back. He opens his notes, he calmly starts preparing for his meeting, and he knows that he will arrive at exactly the time he's going to arrive, regardless of any amount of stress, worry, or anxiety that he contributes to the journey. He also gets there exactly half an hour later. He's on the same bus, of course, but he arrives in a completely different space. I love this analogy because it really represents what happens for us in life. There are certain things that are going to happen and there's not much we can do about them. There are certain things that have already happened and there's not much that we can do about them. And instead of churning up with anxiety, worry, and turmoil in our own heads, if we can decide we're just going to trust the driver, you know, depending on your spirituality, that may be trusting the universe, that may be trusting Hashem, trusting God, but just going, actually, things are all going to work out. It's going to be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. And I'm going to wait until the bus driver pulls in at the final stop. This is another technique that we can use to increase our spirituality and to decrease our stress a little bit. The final technique that I want to talk about today is one that I often find my Christian friends are really, really good at, and many of my Jewish friends find it's a practice that they have to get used to. And that's because in traditional Judaism, which many of us in New Zealand grow up with, there's a focus on formalized prayer, but we don't always experience informal prayer as much. So we often pray in Hebrew and in the synagogue, but we don't necessarily just speak to Hashem in a personal relationship in our own language. So our homework for today is to take a moment to connect with our Creator in our own language, in our own words, in our own space, and to do it in a way that hopefully will increase our spirituality. Thank you for joining me for today's buffet, today's smorgasbord of increasing our spirituality. I hope you were able to find some things that you enjoy to eat. And like I said, please don't split on the rest in case someone else wants to eat it. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee, and you can find this broadcast and our past broadcasts on Planet FM's website.